We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Christmas and one for Epiphany. And we'll send you this new CD for any size year-end donation. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size gift before the end of the year, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Christmas and Epiphany sermons.
Well, I suppose this does happen. The right love at the wrong time, they say. Soulmates meet, they may be already married, even with kids. Now, one would not expect this to raise eyebrows in our sophisticated society, especially in places like New York City. But how does the media cover divorce and remarriage? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our guest for the next segment is Molly Ziegler-Hemingway. She's contributor to GetReligion.org and a columnist for Christianity Today magazine. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Molly, you recently read the vows feature in the New York Times. Something surprised you about what you read, but it sounds like you're even more surprised by the audience's or the reader's reaction.
Yeah, the New York Times has a marriage announcement page that's prime real estate. People love to have their marriage announced in the New York Times on this page, and they pull out one story for in-depth treatment, and that's called the vows column. They take a story that's interesting of a romance that blossomed, and they go through the obstacles that were overcome and whatnot. And this past week's was unbelievable. It actually celebrated the marriage of two people who left their spouses and left their marriages that had five children between the two couples in order to be with the one that they loved. And it was a very nicely written story. It definitely put the nicest construction possible on these two people and what they did to their previous families. And it was a really horrific read. But what surprised me was that everyone thought it was horrible. Normally when you read something transgressive in the New York Times, you look at the comments there and people are celebrating it. Well, right off the top, the comments to this story were people were outraged. And throughout the blogosphere, throughout the internet, the Twitters, everyone was going crazy. Other media outlets picked up on the story and covered it because people were so outraged that the Times would celebrate the demise of two marriages to create another marriage.
Okay, so let me get this straight. The story in this feature was actually two people still married with kids who met right love, wrong time, but they decided in time to leave both of their families to take up together in a new life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I could see why people, the average person, might be outraged by this. What are your critiques of the journalism of the story itself? Because it's not just a story about two people. I mean, this is hardly a story about two people.
That's the number one criticism that other people had about it, was that the reporter failed to call the aggrieved spouses for comment. And in fact, other reporters promptly did call those aggrieved spouses, and the husband of the woman who left had some pretty choice quotes about what the Times had done. Basically said it was complete revisionist history, and it's one thing for people to rewrite history if it just involves themselves, but there were other people involved, including young children, and that the paper shouldn't be party to that without fact-checking. And I actually thought that the absence of the spouses was deafening. You didn't hear from the spouses, and I thought that because you didn't hear from them, they seemed quite loud in the story. But other people really thought that was a journalistic error, that you have to call spouses if you're writing a piece like this when they're admitting to having cheated on their spouses, basically. Even though they claim they didn't, they were explaining that they took drinks together without telling their spouses and whatnot.
If Mayor Bloomberg decides to take up with another woman, you can be certain that the reporter is going to call his aggrieved spouse.
You can. But what is interesting, I think, is that the newspaper has been part of this media culture where we think that the most important value in every marriage is personal happiness. That's what they emphasize in their coverage of, say, same-sex marriage or something like that. And this has been going on for years and years and years, where personal happiness is sort of the be-all, end-all of marriage, and that's how they cover it day after day. And then one day, they cover another marriage in exactly the same way, and people are outraged. So I think they were probably completely surprised by the public outrage, too, because this is how they cover the whole topic. You know, it's always about, it's not about vows or commitment or fidelity or monogamy or anything like that. It's always about personal happiness. This is just another personal happiness story, and why the outrage?
So, do you expect anything to change? Because apparently this isn't the first time that the vows feature has done something like this. And the reporting, you say, ought to be as stringent in something like that as it would be on any other story.
I don't know. I don't think the New York Times is terribly responsive to a lot of criticism such as this. So I think that they will continue. They have been doing it. Actually, last year, I mean, over a year ago, another magazine, New York Magazine, chronicled how often they do this in their vows column, where they feature couples who admit to having cheated on their previous spouses. So this is just another in a long trend of what the New York Times has done. I think they will continue to do it, and I think that they probably enjoy that column being somewhat transgressive and pushing the outer edge of the envelope. And I'm sure that someday we'll look back fondly on the time when the New York Times vows section didn't include polygamous marriage or something like that. I'm sure they'll be looking for more and more ways to push the envelope.
So I'll ask you the question that you ask when you write about this. What can the reaction to this story tell us about what the media in general are missing in general about marriage?
Yeah, well, I asked that question because I'm actually not entirely sure. I guess I sort of bought into the argument that people no longer thought marriage was about things other than personal happiness. I think this shows us that people do understand that marriage is a special arrangement, that the norms of fidelity and monogamy are important. These are things that are not well covered by the media, and I think that maybe this is a good indication that we need better coverage of what marriage is, what it is, what its nature is, why it has certain features, and what those mean and how they impact other arguments such as same-sex marriage, divorce laws, etc.
You were listening recently to actually one of my favorite weekend shows, Weekend Edition on National Public Radio with Leanne Hansen, and you heard something that you found rather refreshing. What is that?
Yeah, and it's this Christmas season. People are always trying to come up with crazy, unusual Christmas stories. Like today, the Washington Post sent out a request for unusual Christmas traditions. So I let them know that I unusually celebrate Christmas by waiting until Christmas for it to start and then mark the full 12 days. But we're always getting these unusual stories about the weirdest, craziest things that are happening. NPR had a fascinating story broadcast by focusing on something that's not that unusual, the singing of Christmas carols. And it went into the history of Christmas carols, how they developed over time, and it was fascinating. They spoke with Philip Brunel, the founder and artistic director of a choral music organization. And he explains the difference between a hymn and a carol. He shows how certain music went from being secular to sacred. One of the things that I thought was most interesting was that Felix Mendelssohn originally composed the tune that we're familiar of it being with Hark the Herald Angels Sing to something celebrating the 400th anniversary of the Gutenberg printing press. So where you hear Hark the Herald, you would actually sing Gutenberg in those same notes. I just thought this was really interesting. Mendelssohn thought that there was no way that tune would ever make it as a sacred hymn. So shows you what this Lutheran composer knew, since that's one of the most beloved Christmas carols out there. But it had a lot of really interesting details. It talked about the importance of the musical, just the actual music and the tones, and helping people remember the hymns and the carols, and how that makes them more loved over time. And it really showed how good journalism is done. It was perfect for the radio medium. You had snippets of carols that are well loved. They also had snippets of carols that the original tune is well known, but by new artists. It's a lot of information, even for someone who's well versed in the topic. And it was just a great example of religious journalism.
You point out in the piece that you wrote that on the subject of the history of Christian hymns being included in actual worship services, we have Lutherans to thank for that.
Yeah, this is something that's interesting in Lutheran heritage. The advent of hymnody really takes place where, sung during worship services by parishioners. That's something that's really something that happened at the time of Luther. Prior to that, there were, of course, many Gregorian chants, and there were parts of the liturgy that were chanted. But bringing music into worship, Luther felt that was a great way to teach people the gospel. I think his quote is, "Music is the handmaiden of the gospel." So if they had a tune to go with the hymn that was rich in messaging about doctrine, it would help them remember. And this obviously worked. It took Germany by storm. It expanded, you know, to other countries. And to this day, we get a lot of our doctrine by singing it. We learn about, you know, about the teachings of the Scripture and what the Church has to say about these things by singing hymns throughout the church year.
Before we let you go, Molly, kind of your general journalist's take on how Christmas is faring in the media this year?
I don't know. There have been so many bad years in recent history where all that people could talk about was the war on Christmas, and they were obsessing about consumerism or something, these Christmas stories that are really unimportant or silly. This year we haven't seen a lot of good stuff, but we also haven't seen a lot of the bad stuff or the silly stuff, and there's still Christmas week to go through. One of the things the media sometimes do during Christian holy seasons is run stories questioning various aspects of Scripture. We haven't seen that this Christmas season. So, nothing particularly remarkable, but it's also nice that we haven't been barraged with the bad stuff.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is contributor to GetReligion.org and a columnist for Christianity Today magazine. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.